The rumour mill in overdrive kick-started the week for shares in Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank, up 2.2 and 4.3% respectively, on news that a merger between the two might be on the cards. Germany's Welt am Sonntag newspaper was the first to report on the early stage talks and said Berlin politicians expect a decision in the coming weeks. One German official told Reuters that Berlin is so worried about the health of Deutsche Bank that it's pushed for a merger with rival Commerzbank, even though it could open up a huge financial shortfall.
It's showtime, says Apple in a media invite for a March 25th event. While the Cupertino tech giant isn't saying much more beyond that, speculation is building that it's planning to launch a streaming television service. Sources have told Reuters that Apple's building a new global video service that will likely include subscription TV and challenge rivals from Netflix to Amazon Prime Video.
What we have secured, as I said, is legally binding changes, which is exactly what Parliament asked us to secure. And what we have secured is very clearly that the backstop cannot be indefinite, cannot become permanent. It is only temporary, if it is the case that we were ever to get into the backstop.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's March the 12th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. We've got lots to cover this morning. The latest on Boeing, lots going on with Brexit as well. You heard British Prime Minister Theresa May there in the opening montage. As the deadline approaches for Brexit in the UK, we'll have an update a little bit later on that. We're also watching, again, the Boeing situation this morning. Lots of developments with Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircraft around the world. We'll get to a couple of those, too. On the program today, Heather Long is with us, economics correspondent at the Washington Post. President Trump has proposed a $4.7 trillion budget that includes domestic cuts and calls for nearly $8.6 billion for a border wall. We're going to go through the budget with Heather momentarily. She's in our first segment this morning. A little bit later, Andrew Challenger will be here from Challenger Gray and Christmas to talk about a couple of things, including the latest jobs report. You remember on Friday, 20,000 jobs created. There's also some news about an appeals court ruling about older job candidates not being protected by bias laws. Andrew will be with us in our second segment at about 5:38 this morning. So a pretty good show for you today. Stay tuned. We'll get to it all, including news, traffic, weather, and sports as well. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are a little bit higher this morning. And as we wait to see what the Dow is going to do this morning, Dow futures, let's see, my computer is refreshing. We'll get back to those in just a second. In Europe, markets are generally mixed. In London, off by a fraction. In Germany and France, up about a quarter of a percent. And in Asia, markets are going to end the day in positive territory. The Nikkei up nearly 2%, the Hang Seng up nearly 1.5%, and the Shanghai up a little bit more than 1% as well this morning. And again, on the U.S. futures side, Dow futures are off just a fraction this morning, and oil is trading at $57.37 a barrel, which is up about 58 cents. A couple of stories this morning. You also heard in the montage, Apple is inviting the news media to an event this month where the tech giant expected to announce its rumored Apple News and a streaming TV service. Apple is calling the March 25th event its showtime. According to the Apple-centric website Mac Rumors, the Apple News service will offer paid subscription options for unlimited access to magazine and paywalled sites, including the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, and the New York Times for $9.99 a month. The streaming TV service is said to be months away, but Apple has more than two dozen original TV shows in the works. The news about Boeing this morning, South Koreans have now grounded the 737-8 MAX 8 aircraft. That's in addition to Singapore and Australia banning incoming flights and grounding the aircraft as well. The BBC reporting only a few of the 737 MAX 8 aircraft fly into Singapore and Australia. Those decisions come after the weekend crash in Ethiopia, of an Ethiopian Airlines jetliner that killed 157 people. Front and center this morning is the budget proposed yesterday by President Trump. His 2020 budget projects economic growth of about 3% or higher over the next 5 years. There are lots of cuts as well to domestic programs, including Medicare. Let's bring in Heather Long with more on this morning, economics correspondent at The Washington Post. Heather, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Always good to chat economics.
First thing in the morning, too, yeah. So what is the headline feature here? I know there's a lot to cover on the budget, but in your mind, what are the big biggies?
Well, I guess I'd say there's three top takeaways. Number one is the usual disclaimer that this budget is going nowhere. Even Republicans in Congress are sort of like, thank you, I'm going to put this in the recycle bin. So it's more of a document to give a little bit more insight into President Trump's 2020 reelection campaign than it is sort of a serious budget document. Number two is, big deficits are here to stay. The administration admits that the deficit this year is going to hit $1.1 trillion, really an unprecedented number in good economic times. And even under the rosiest assumptions used in this budget, the deficit stays over $1 trillion for the next 4 years at least. It just underscores how hard it is to get spending and revenues under control in Washington and to make any dent in trying to get our debt on a more sustainable path in the coming years. The final point is we're getting a sense maybe of what could be the next really big fight between the White House and Congress, probably around September when the current budget expires. President Trump seems to be drawing a red line here, saying that he wants even more money for the military, so certainly no cuts to defense spending, Veterans Affairs, or Homeland Security. And of course, he asks once again for additional money for the wall, $8.6 billion in this budget, which would be even more than he shut down, did the partial government shutdown over, asking Congress just a few weeks ago.
So lots to look forward to, including perhaps another fight later this year. Heather, you mentioned the defense. I'm going to try to go through a couple of what you mentioned there. First, defense. If you go through the whole list of the top countries and what they spend on defense, the U.S. spends, this budget is way more than that by a long shot, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, the number everybody's talking about is that $750 billion figure, which would be 5% above what we're spending this year. It's interesting to point out that President Trump is actually asking for more money in this budget than even the Defense Department itself asked for when it put in its request. So there's a little bit of head scratching. Why are we going quite this high at a time when both the White House and others have said, at least given lip service, to say that they would like to work on ways to control spending and control the budget going forward.
Yeah, and the idea that we're drawing down these wars that we've been fighting that has been so costly for us, that too is a head-scratcher. The White House saying what in response to those questions?
Well, yeah, they were asked that several times yesterday on various phone calls and in the press conference. I mean, their response is that they're building the military of tomorrow, so they really need to do more investment in what I would call cyber war, basically. There's a little bit of money for the Space Force that President Trump would like to do, but it's really about building out better, bigger and better cyber commands and these sorts of things, not so much like, there needs to be some, I think most people agree, there needs to be some replacement of certain types of airplanes and certain types of ships, but again, that was already built into the DOD, the Department of Defense budget. We'll see. Again, I think a lot of this is sort of a non-starter in Congress, but I think what President Trump is trying to signal here to Democrats is he's really not going to stand for cuts to the Department of Defense budget.
Yeah, a couple of things inside of the budget, too, concerning, first of all, the potential cuts to Medicare, also $1 billion in cuts to the National Science Foundation, and $25 million, I think I saw in there, for the Jack Nicklaus Foundation. Lots of odd things.
Yeah, there's always funny requests throughout. So I'll say a couple things. On the science budget, yeah, that's alarming. Again, last year, Congress rejected these calls for cuts to particularly education and to science funding and ended up increasing those lines. So most people sort of wave this off as it's a bit of gimmicks that were going on to try to make this budget not look like a total just spend free for all on the credit card. The Medicare cuts are interesting. You know, everybody who cares about the debt agrees that the long-term drivers of the debt are Social Security and Medicare, and that there do need to be some reforms long-term to those programs. It was a surprise to people to see in this budget that the president was calling it's about $850 billion in cuts to Medicare over the next 10 years. That's a drop in the bucket. If you actually read the details of what it says, most of it is talking about changing the way some payments go to hospitals and for certain care programs. So, you know, both parties have identified, and Washington Post and many media outlets have written about some care providers that just charge the government way too much. They're charging for procedures. Like, you can see in the data that one doctor or one hospital is charging way more than anybody else across the country. And that's the kind of, I hate to use the term, waste, fraud, and abuse that that President Trump is put in his budget that he would like to, you know, to address and to put in some the reforms to try to address. So it isn't as alarming as it looks on first cut. But it's a good reminder that President Trump promised not to touch Medicare or Social Security, and so Democrats are already going after him, even for a proposal like this that was similar to one in Obama's budget. It's probably a non-starter.
Heather, we talked earlier about the deficits in the budget. It relies on a revenue stream that has a GDP of about 3% or more over the next 5 years. How realistic is that?
I think it's fair to say it's pretty wildly unrealistic. I like to describe it as it's basically the akin to having A-plus growth for the next 10 years in order to get this budget achieved. It saves, this rosy projection saved them about $4 trillion. So it really does drive the bulk of their savings in this budget. Most everybody else, like the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office that does this type of forecasting, relies on a figure about that's just around 2%, so 1.9 to 2%. Again, the Trump administration is using something that's a full percent above that, 3% growth every year for the next decade, more or less. That, you know, that might not sound like a big difference, but that makes trillions of dollars of difference in your forecast.
And you say this is a debt on arrival budget, but if, you know, we do rely on this, if that doesn't pan out, what does that do to that deficit number? It pretty much goes through the roof, doesn't it?
Well, it already goes through the roof. I'm about to finish a piece from the Washington Post this morning. I ran the calculations, and even in their budget, so the president's own numbers, remember on the campaign trail, he promised that he could eliminate the debt in 8 years. Obviously, that was a wild promise that nobody expected him to keep. Yeah, but some people thought he may at least not make it worse, since he was so against President Obama adding a lot to the debt under his term. In actuality, the numbers show that in President Trump's own rosy budget, that if he were to be in office for 8 years, that he would leave with the debt 50% higher than when he started, and would have added in a dollar terms almost as much to the debt. So if the numbers do not turn out to be as rosy as he said, instead of adding $7 trillion to the debt, Obama added about $8 trillion, then he would add probably closer to $10 trillion, so even more than President Obama did in a dollar term.
What is wrong with us, Heather? Are we beyond the point now where we can't put together a realistic budget? Or is this what we're going to see from here on out?
It sure looks that way. I mean, you think about the last time that Congress and the White House made a compromise Republicans and Democrats just over a year ago were sitting there trying to say, okay, how are we going to solve this budget problem? And instead of making any reductions or moving any way closer to fiscal sanity, they actually looked at each other, and Republicans said, how about you? I'll give you more money for your domestic programs. And Democrats said, okay, I'll give you more money for the military like you want. So we ended up having this grand compromise of let's just spend even more money and not care. So, and the reality is a lot of people think that that could easily happen again. And in September, we just sort of say, okay, let's keep this high funding level going through the end of the year, and we'll deal with it another time.
All right, Heather, we'll be looking forward to your story coming out today, and it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
You too. Take care.
Heather Long from the Washington Post. She's economics correspondent there. More from her at WashingtonPost.com, and make sure you follow her on Twitter as well, at By Heather Long.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us this morning on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. February saw the highest number of job cuts in more than 3.5 years. And on Friday, the jobs report showed just 20,000 jobs added by employers over the last month. Joining us this morning is Andrew Challenger. He's the vice president at Challenger Gray and Christmas in Chicago, the global outplacement and career transitioning firm. Andrew, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So a couple of headlines here. The job cuts concerning 3.5 years, the biggest number there. What's going on?
Yeah, we certainly saw a slowdown in hiring last month. While we've been off to a good pace at the beginning of the year, hopefully this last month was just an anomaly and not a trend going forward. But we did also see in our own job cuts report that February was the biggest month in the last 3 years for job cut announcements. Some worrying signs, but of course, these numbers can be pretty volatile month to month. So hopefully, not indicating a long term trend.
Yeah, 76,835 positions cut. That's the most I think since 2015, if I'm reading that right. So what would be what would be causing the anomaly? Do you think?
There could be a little bit of holdout from the government shutdown. There was some pretty bad weather during the month, and it might have just caused employers to slow down their activity, but we'll see. It is concerning to see a number that low, but we did see wage growth, and we see this continued streak of over 100 months of continued jobs added to the economy. So I don't think it's time to panic yet.
Yeah, what point is the time to panic? Do you think if we see another month, perhaps, or is it another 2 months, or where's your panic button?
Yeah, 2 or 3 months of really low or even negative job growth, I think puts everybody's gets everybody in panic mode a little bit.
If you go through the numbers on the back to the job cuts report, what are the industries that are leading that, and what do those what do the individual numbers of these industries tell you about what might be going on in the economy?
Yeah, we continued to see the number one sector where job cuts occurred was in retail. It's been an industry where over the last 3 years, we've seen a large number of cuts. This last month, it was led out by the bankruptcy of Payless Shoes, where they closed 2,500 stores. 16,000 workers were let go and added into the unemployment numbers. That industry is going through this overall trend. We're moving from e-commerce to from brick and mortar retail, and so we're going to continue to see store closures there, and continue to see that industry go through a lot of change, and particularly if the economy is headed in a direction where there's going to be less money in people's pockets and less money to spend in stores.
Andrew, as I go through the numbers further, I don't think I've ever asked you about the geography of this, but it just jumped off the page at me about Massachusetts. Looks like they have the biggest number of cuts, and the number of cuts in Illinois. Illinois leads in the Midwest. Those are both concerning data points.
Yeah, the big ones out of the Midwest, out of Massachusetts, we saw these big cuts out of General Electric. They made these huge sweeping changes, and they announced that they did let go 30,000 people over the last couple months. And the headquarters is in Massachusetts. So that's where we saw those numbers coming from. And in the Midwest, it was spread across quite a couple different industries. But we did see some of those jobs leaving manufacturing and the professional and business services sectors.
I wanted to talk to you also about another story that's out there, and I know you've been watching it very closely. Recent U.S. Court of Appeals ruling, Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruling on the age bias laws, saying that older job candidates are not protected by those laws in a couple of ways. Talk to us a little bit about that, and why should we be concerned to see that?
Yeah, it's concerning to see a channel shut down where older workers had some ability to fight age discrimination in their job hunt. Certainly the ADEA is still going to cover working older workers, those that are already employed, but it's not going to cover job seekers. Those are going out and finding jobs right now. So an example would be, you know, companies that post a job and say, we're looking for somebody between 5 and 7 years of experience, right? They cap it off. They say they're not really looking for people with greater years of experience. It's a practice that job seekers do face older workers and can keep them from applying to those positions, makes them feel uncomfortable if they do get an interview, that they're not, the company's really not looking for somebody like them. And that practice, there are other laws that might keep employers from using language like that, but certainly older workers are not being protected now by this specific law.
What advice can you give here? What strategies can we put in place for older workers to sort of get past some of this?
Yeah, one thing we're always telling older workers who are out there is, first, never apologize for being, say, over 60. Nobody really wants to hire somebody who's over 60 or having that kind of defeatist attitude. It really shows in an interview. And employers want to hire people who are confident in themselves and their abilities, regardless of their age.
With more and more people working past their retirement age, this is not an issue that's going away.
Yeah, certainly today, more and more of the workforce either wants to work later in their lives or has to work later in their lives, and they're going to face some of these stereotypes that, say you're particularly expensive because of all your years of experience, or that you're not going to be able to adapt to the new technology that's in the workforce. Those are things that older workers face in terms of discrimination in their searches, and it can be something that's difficult to combat.
Andrew, thanks for being with us this morning. Always a good conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Andrew Challenger, who's vice president at Challenger Gray and Christmas in Chicago, the outplacement firm and training firm here in Chicago. Always good to have Andy Challenger on with us here on the Opening Bell. You can find more, by the way, at challengergray.com.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a mixed open on Wall Street a little bit later on. Dow futures down about 29 points off a fraction, and S&P and NASDAQ futures are each up a fraction heading to the Opening Bell. Now, a look at agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. President Trump's 2020 budget yesterday proposed a 15% cut for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, calling its subsidies to farmers, quote, overly generous, at a time when those farmers are going through the worst crisis in decades because of depressed commodity prices. The president's budget requested $20.8 billion from the USDA. That's that's a cut of $3.6 billion, or 15%, from the 2019 estimate. It proposes reducing premium subsidies for crop insurance, limiting the number of producers who would be eligible, and tightening commodity payment limits. Democrats slam the move as short-sighted. While the crop insurance industry will see the deepest cut, said it would undermine a key financial safety net for farmers at a time when they need it the most. And joining in the condemnation of the budget message, President of the Illinois Farm Bureau, Rich Giebert, who said the proposed 15% budget cuts budget would be devastating to farmers who have endured 5 years in a row of declining net farm income and mounting pressures on increases in inputs for agriculture. We did confirm another sale of soybeans to China yesterday, 926,000 metric tons for delivery to China during the current marketing year. But despite that, we saw lower prices at the board, with wheat futures really taking a sharp drop. And at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, hog futures rallied for the second day. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, thank you. You too. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. British Prime Minister Theresa May is facing continued opposition to her European Union divorce deal, despite legally binding changes that she hopes will win parliamentary support for the agreement. The House of Commons will vote today after last-minute talks with the EU produced assurances that May said means the deal couldn't be used to tie Britain to the bloc indefinitely. But the opposition Labour Party says there is continued skepticism about whether May had won any substantive concessions. So we will see a vote coming today on Brexit in the UK. We're watching that very closely. The CEO of Wells Fargo will let Congress know today how he's doing cleaning up that troubled bank. Tim Sloan will testify at a House Financial Services Committee on holding the nation's fourth largest bank accountable for what the panel calls a pattern of consumer abuses. Sloan became CEO in 2016 after revelations that Wells Fargo employees opened millions of accounts without customers' knowledge in order to meet aggressive sales goals. Problems then cropped up across all of the bank's business lines. And Amazon is changing the rule that required its marketplace have the lowest prices for items sold by third parties. The move, reported by Axios, will allow people to get their items cheaper elsewhere. The change comes after Connecticut Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal asked the Justice Department last year to look at how Amazon's practices could be affecting competition with other websites. The Democrat wrote that he was concerned that the old policy could allow Amazon to artificially inflate prices. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Tuesday, March the 12th. The Small Business Optimism Index for February is the first economic report out today. Analysts expect to see the index regain some of the ground it lost in January. The February Consumer Price Index is due out as well. Economists forecasting a 0.2% increase in the inflation rate. That would match January's bump in the CPI. On the earnings calendar today, Dick's Sporting Good earnings. As we mentioned, Wells Fargo CEO testifies before the House Financial Services Committee. T-Mobile and Sprint CEOs are testifying before Congress today as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, March the 12th.